country music is playing. Champagne bottles are popping tonight because it is a big, big day at Fantasy Outliers Central. And we're here with Fantasy Outliers, the podcast.
Hey, everybody.
And it's this is Dave.
And Bro Dave.
And also tonight we have...
Bro Chris.
Bro Chris is here. And there's only one reason that we could get Bro Chris out of his computer hole tonight. And that is... It's time for us to release the Fantasy Outliers 2017 player projections.
That's right.
Really big day. Big day. We got a lot to get through today. We're going to talk about every position. We're going to talk about multiple players at every position and how they fared in our projection system. And we're going to talk for as long as it takes to get through.
Yeah, this is going to be a while.
Everything.
This is going to be horrible. You guys are going to be so bored by the end of this.
So we're going to get to projections in a minute. I want to talk for a couple minutes about some other stuff. So Dave, in the ongoing summer of you and me hanging out constantly,
yeah,
we just got back from a nice camping trip this last weekend with our wives and girlfriends, sitting around the campfire, drinking some beers, all kinds of stuff. Did you have a good time?
It was a good time. It was like the most relaxing weekend I've had in forever.
It was pretty good.
It was kind of reminiscent of what we did a couple of weeks ago when we were in Western Illinois.
But actually out in the wilderness.
We were actually in Wisconsin this time.
So. Yeah, and we got in a lake, we went for a hike.
It's pretty fun.
So we played this game. It's called Five Things. It's sort of an improv warm-up, and I think we could use that tonight because this is going to be a long podcast where we're going to talk about projections for every position. So I'm going to ask Dave a question. He's going to give us five answers as fast as he can.
Okay.
The question is, what's the first thing that you thought when you opened up Chris's spreadsheet and saw the master projection list for today?
Oh my gosh, there's a lot of numbers in here.
Right. Four.
Everything is color-coded, and I don't know what these colors mean.
Three.
This is going to take a long time to get through.
Two.
I'm sort of afraid.
Yep. One.
The kickers don't make any sense.
Yeah.
That's what we got.
That's pretty good.
I can do
now,
this.
Chris. Now you get to play.
Wait,
too.
Can I react to his first?
No,
no, you don't get to react. No,
no, we'll talk about all that later. Now, Chris, I'm going to ask you another question. Mm-hmm. Chris, what are the five things that you think when you wake up from your baby crying?
When I wake up from my baby crying?
Yes.
Oh,
the five things that pop into your head. Five.
God, I got to work on those projections.
Four.
I hope he doesn't die.
Three.
I'm a terrible father.
Two.
I don't know. I'm just making this up.
One.
I don't know. He probably needs a diaper change.
Okay. Great. Now everybody's ready to go.
Those are very good, honest answers.
Those are great answers. I will tell you, I love that you said, I don't know, I'm making this up. And that might have been an answer to like frustration with the game that I was making you play. It might also have been questioning of one's fitness as a parent, which is the same thing I think every day when I wake up.
Yeah. I think that's
so I'm with you on that one. We are definitely all making it up. So this is a huge amount of work, and we're really excited to share it with everybody. And I think before we dive in, we're gonna talk about a couple of different things regarding kind of what the projections are, how we think people could maybe use them, or how we should think about them right now. And
because they're not really just straight up list of rankings like you would see in a normal maybe from a normal fantasy quote unquote expert or whatever. These are kind of a different animal,
right?
To begin with, and. You know, essentially this is in line with everything that we've doing here at Fantasy Outliers. Like, this is all about value, right? So we're not talking about raw points. We're talking about comparing players at different position groups to each other to see which ones have the best or worst values, and hopefully direct us to which ones we should take or not take. What that kind of means is, I think holistically, is that this is... You know, when you sort these guys by value, they're not set up to be a straight up draft list.
Order.
Yeah. Like it's not a good top 200 list because it has like certain players that are pretty valuable, like defenses or whatever, that are highly ranked, that it'll put way higher than you would ever need to take them in
because
a draft.
Because basically these orders are how we think people are going to perform during the year, but that doesn't mean that that's what the market is paying for them right now in drafts.
Right. Drafts are always a distorted view of what actually ends up happening at the end of the year, and these predictions are trying to predict what happens at the end of the year.
Right.
And also it's taken, because it's taken that value-based approach, like all the position groups, the center point of every position group is zero. Right. So like a good kicker might score less points, but he might net you an average of +3, even though he's scoring less than a quarterback who's scoring, I don't know, 18 points a game, who's only netting you a zero or a +2.
Right.
Or
so,
whatever,
so when you're sorting that list by overall value, you're getting kickers higher than they should be, even though you don't need to draft them that high.
Right.
Just still take them at the end or whatever. But
right. So I think that bears just kind of pointing out for. I think that bears just kind of talking about for a second again, just to point out that our approach fundamentally is about position versus position matchups. That kind of value-based approach is what we're always going for. And so the list and the way that we're going to talk about it is always going to be players in comparison with other players at their position.
Right, yeah.
So
yeah, we're not going to do like a top 200, this guy at this point. We're going to do just position by position.
Right. Yeah, and I think that in a lot of ways, that's the easiest way to kind of grok what we're doing here is to look at those individual matchups. And then, you know, we're hoping that you guys, our listeners, can use that as a guide to kind of figure out what things are good values in the overall kind of ADP based market.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so let's talk. Oh, sorry. Go ahead.
No, and I mean, I was also going to mention some of like about where you can find these people in the draft. Like, you know, if their ADP is sixth round and we think they're a second rounder, then why not get them in the fifth or something like that?
Yeah, exactly. Right. Those are exactly the types of things that you should be doing when you're looking at this list.
Yeah, so. You can overpay, reach a little bit. This is maybe a guide to reach a little bit, but not a guide to reach a lot.
Mm-hmm. And so I think we should touch on a little bit of what, just really quickly, like what went into the models, like kind of a little bit of how they're built. So Chris, you've got a lot of data points in these models. We touched on this in the third episode a little bit. We don't have to go back and talk about what a gradient boosting regressor is or any of that stuff, but you know, what are the data points that are in this model that help it predict the future?
Yeah, so I can tell you all the, what it starts out with, and then for different models we narrow it down in different ways. Like we might use different columns or different combinations of data sets, just whatever is most predictive. But like for example, I'm looking at the quarterback, the veteran quarterback points per opportunity, the data sets that actually start out in it. I'm not saying these are what end up in it, but you have stuff like defensive team statistics, college, the quarterback's college stats, some aggregated ratings across their performance levels. So some of the general aspects of their team, like are they a successful franchise, for example, their lineup history, like the number of times their offensive line has played together in the past 5 years.
Okay, so that's like, interesting.
Yeah, so if like two guys have been on the same team for the last 5 years, you get a +5 there, right? So like there's only a certain number of possible combinations. So like that percentage is like sort of a rating of their, I don't know, their chemistry or something like that.
Okay, yeah. So it's got a lot of things in there that I wouldn't necessarily say they're proprietary, but they're metrics that are probably more advanced than just raw NFL stats.
Yeah. And now, one real quick, just to give people scale, you were talking to me the other day. We were talking the other day, and I asked you a question about something, and you said, "Well, there's 1,400 something something."
There's like 4,000 columns of data in here.
Right. 4,000 columns of data, 1,400 micro decisions or something. You said, "Can you put a point on what those numbers are, just so people can understand the scale of what you're looking at?"
So yeah, so for the quarterback points per opportunity, that I only got like maybe a quarter of the way through the data sets. There's a bunch more, but we take those data sets and I also derived features from the features, like some aggregated statistics. So the number of columns that we get to is for that particular one is like 4,250, and then it gets whittled down in creative ways, some based on machine learning, some not. And the ultimate model has 45 inputs, some of which are just like the same as they were in the data set, some of which are aggregates of across those different data sets, if that makes sense.
And it's using all of this raw information to cut down to the things that it thinks that actually matter
the most.
And then at the end of the day, it's kicking out a couple of metrics. You mentioned points per opportunity.
Right.
That's one of the things that's kind of unique to these predictions. All of the players have
individual points per opportunity.
Yeah, a ranking essentially. And that's useful for a bunch of reasons. Like, you know, say a player is a red zone target. He doesn't get a lot of opportunities, but the opportunities he gets are big ones.
Right.
He might have a really high points per opportunity.
Right.
And then on the other calculation they would do is actual projected opportunities.
Right.
So that's kind of obvious, right? Running back carry, chance to catch a pass, that kind of thing.
Right.
And so that's predicted too. And you can cross those together and you get essentially the output of total points per week,
which we call, you know, in the predictions, if you take a look at our spreadsheet, we call it value versus tier one and tier two players, right?
It's the value is derived from the points per game.
Right.
So
yeah, projected points per game.
Yeah. So then we put it into the rest of the position and figure out what their value is against the average player at their position.
Yeah.
Basically.
Like the tier one is the top 10 projected points per game at that position. Tier two is the 10 through 20th. So if your value versus the top 20 running backs is positive, that means that you're running back one, basically.
Right. Right. And so this yields a giant set of predictions for all kinds of players. You know, it's not just 200. It's actually tons of them.
Right.
And what we find is that, and Chris, I think you can speak to this a little better than I can, which is that the data science is useful and it can tell you a lot of interesting things, but it's always best when it's crossed with kind of an expert opinion or an informed human opinion to catch all the things that the data can't, because it's always, in a sense, incomplete. Would you agree with that?
From what I've been told by some smart people, there's been some research done where they found that decision-making was improved when you combine machine learning with human intuition. It is better than either one by itself. So that's kind of what we're trying to do here. I mean,
Well, it bodes well for us people not being taken over by robots quite yet, huh?
That's true.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, we all... I don't know about you guys, but I like to be involved in the decisions that I make. Like, I don't want to just, like, coldly follow somebody else's predictions and not enter in my own thoughts into it. Right.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you want to imprint your own strategy and your own thoughts.
By the way, the thing that I would point out about this, that kind of lines up with what you guys are talking about and also the way that the predictions are structured, is if you go and check out our prediction spreadsheet, which you can find on our Facebook group, if you sign up for a newsletter, we will send you the link. If you send us an email at podcast@fantasyoutliers.com, we'll send you the link. You can get to the Google Doc. You can mess with the data. The reason I bring this up is because, you know, those metrics of points per opportunity and opportunities per game yielding that prediction number, you know, you could actually take our spreadsheet and go into it and adjust those parameters to see how that affects a player's value.
Right.
So if you look at our predictions and go, there's no way that this player gets that many opportunities a game on average because they get injured or I think they have a muddy situation.
With what it's predicting.
You can go in and adjust it slightly and that'll show you, and you'll be able to see the difference that makes in the prediction. So you can actually customize these if you wanted to yourself too.
Yeah, exactly. It's a really nice point because it's not a static spreadsheet. You can make it into what you want.
Right.
So let's get into some things that it is not good at predicting.
Right.
So like we just
always got to start with the negative, right?
Yeah.
I thought we just started with the positive.
Yeah. Well, you know,
that's true. That's true.
So one thing that, we'll call it the math box, the algorithm that Chris has developed.
Chris Jr.
Or the math box. One thing that it is not great at predicting or one thing that it doesn't really know very much about is situation. So, for example, it is not reading injury reports every day. You know, this is data that was actually probably from about 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Right.
That it that the predictions were built on. So it doesn't have information like if a coach named a running back the starter. It doesn't know that,
right?
Which would definitely affect his opportunities. It also doesn't know if a guy just came off the PUP list or something like that.
Right.
So, you know, there are definitely some things that need to get adjusted.
Well, it knows if they played in the last game of the season or not. And that's actually an interesting one that has shown up in the final models, because if someone gets injured at the end of the season, they probably won't have a full off season, and that could affect their upcoming year. So it does have some stuff like that.
Right. It knows things from previous years, but the point is that it doesn't have up to the minute situational news, especially as it comes to injuries or things that might have happened in practice.
And that's another reason that you could go in and alter the points per opportunity or opportunities per game if you felt like that was going to make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So another thing that it has some difficulty with, we noticed, is it is also not great at predicting rookies or second-year players. It tends to have – there's not a whole lot of data for them because they're rookies. It's pulling combine data and college stats and stuff like that. But, you know, the error rates for those guys are higher than some of the other than the veterans, the two-plus-year guys.
Right.
So you just need to – when we talk about those guys, if we skip over something or whatever, it's because maybe the data is not so complete, or we think that it maybe isn't so, we're not so confident in it.
So at a glance, and Chris, you can kind of tell me what you think about this too. It felt like the math box was kind of conservative on running back and wide receiver rookie and second year players, and maybe less so on some of the other positions. But it's definitely something that we're looking to improve over time, right?
Yeah. So I think, I just wanted to add in that there is team data, team offense and defense and stuff like that, in addition to the college and combine and draft data, any coaching changes and things like that for rookies. I think one thing that I would do differently next year is have the test set be on more years. This past year, I only used the past 4 years as my test set. So you can imagine there's only so many starting running backs in the past 4 years. There's only so many patterns. Now, I mean, the training set could possibly go up all the way back to 1994. It could go to 2002 or 2009. It kind of depends what works. But I think just because like maybe if it is conservative on wide receivers and running backs, maybe that's just because in the test set, no one really popped or something like that. Like it's just not really as generalizable, in other words.
So before we dive into the projections themselves, it's an exciting day at Fantasy Outliers for another reason, and that's because I want to introduce a little game to the podcast. And this game that I want to introduce is, you know, we're having a couple beers right now because we're kind of relaxing. We're trying to get over that anxiety of recording. Everybody's heard of drinking games before, right?
No. What?
Never heard of a drinking game?
No.
All right. Well, a drinking game is like if you're watching a program that you enjoy with friends, whenever something that's a cliche happens, everybody has to take a drink.
You're saying this like we don't know what this is.
I know. Well, I'm just explaining it to the audience. I thought that's what you guys set me up for.
Okay.
So I don't really want to encourage our audience to play a drinking game. What I want to encourage them to do is play an email review or tweet game. So every time Dave says, you know, I want you to tweet at Fantasy Outliers or email us to get the prediction
sheet.
There's
going to be a lot of those. It's like
or give us
sense.
A review. Every time you hear me say that's really interesting, tweet at us, email us, rate us on iTunes. Every time you hear Chris sigh before he gives an answer to a question that we have.
Or have like a really long pause and then a sigh.
And then a sigh and then an answer. Rate us, tweet at us. Email us. Really, we're just desperate to hear from some people. So please send us some emails and let us know, A, if you want to see these predictions, and B, what you think about the stuff we're saying. So with that being said, let's hop into the predictions.
Yeah, let's do it.
Let's hop into the next 5 hours of our lives, guys. So we're going to start with quarterback tonight because it seemed like a good one to kind of dive into. And you know, there's some interesting stuff going on in here as far as the predictions go. What's going to happen here is basically Dave, Bro Dave, kind of has a kind of hot or not list. that the math box has kind of spit out.
The green light, red light.
Yeah, the green light, red light. He's going to take us through that, and then Chris and I are going to kind of give color commentary as we kind of talk through it.
All right.
So I'm going to hand it over to Dave.
Yeah. So one quick note, as I was digging through this massive amount of information, one of the things I noticed is that, you know, quarterbacks going back to the normal draft or to regular drafts historically are fairly predictable. And that is kind of in line with what the data says. Mm-hmm. The error rates for quarterbacks, because there's so much more information on them, they're involved in more plays, is fairly low compared to the other positions. So this feels more solid than some of the other positions. It's more predictable,
okay,
statistically. So we'll just get right into it, right? We've been talking forever here.
Drum roll, who is our number one quarterback?
Yeah, number one thing. Number one quarterback that MathBox says 2017.
Yep.
Russell Wilson. He is almost, well, what is that, 1.5 points?
He's just over double.
Yeah. He's a plus 3.46
right
in a weekly above average. And the next closest player, which is a huge surprise to me, actually, the number two guy is Ben Roethlisberger at 1.77.
Right.
So you got kind of like Russell Wilson. He's about expert consensus ranking. He's about number five. So it's not a huge surprise.
In the position.
In his position. Right. Yeah. This is all within the quarterback position. Right. So right. Russell Wilson at one, you know, it's a little surprising, not that big of a deal. But Ben Roethlisberger at number two, I mean, his expert consensus rank is number 15.
Right.
And ESPN ADP, he's at 14 overall.
14
in the position.
Yeah, the overall draft slot that we have for Roethlisberger is 124. So saying that you could potentially grab who's going to be the best, the second best quarterback at pick 124 is pretty huge.
Is huge. So that's something that feels like a bit of a stake in the ground for MathBox's first big slate of predictions.
So let's talk about what we think about those two things for a second. So Russell Wilson had kind of a rough year last year, right? A lot of people say that he's injured.
He was injured most of the year, yeah.
Yeah, and that maybe he's just ready to make a bit of a comeback. He's definitely somebody who runs a little bit. Mm-hmm. So maybe he's getting you some extra points because of that. He might be one of the I think he's one of the few quarterbacks that are in the league right now that you can kind of expect to give you a little bit of value running. So maybe that's part of what's factoring into it.
Yeah, I mean, you can see it. You can see something like that reflected in the points per opportunity. He has the highest at 0.51.
Right.
And Roethlisberger is real close at 0.49.
Right.
So it's probably his legs, but, you know, I'm not going to say that I know why MathBox is saying that.
Right.
But
Chris, do you have anything you want to add into why you think Russell Wilson might have been ended up as the number one?
Well, I think it's interesting. He has a 0.51 points per opportunity, but that's 0.18 points above the average for quarterback. So, and that's the highest.
They're pretty high. They're usually in the low 40s or mid 40s. But it is the highest, and he also is pretty far up there in projected opportunities per game. He's basically 41, and most of the other guys are right around 40. Some of the big slingers, you know, Aaron Rodgers, Stafford, Drew Brees, they're at like 43-ish. So they're all really close. But that gives Russell Wilson projected points per week of about 21.
Yeah.
And I will say, I think this is kind of interesting. His week-to-week variance is pretty darn high. His projected week-to-week variance is on a scale of 0 to 1. I mean, most people who score a lot of points are at are a little bit higher, but he's at 0.9, and like Ben Roethlisberger is at 0.7, Aaron Rodgers is 0.5.
Yeah, Chris, can you explain that real quick? Like, what does that mean exactly?
I was about to sigh. Man, I probably should have.
Don't you want those emails? You should sigh.
I just made, like, I spent most of the time working on points per opportunity and opportunities per game. But I just use the week-to-week variance, trying to predict the standard deviation of their points scored throughout the season. And that's a hard thing to do, so I just kind of use it as a rough metric. We're not reporting the actual standard deviation, just relative to position. It comes from the standard deviation of points scored from week to week, if that makes sense.
It does, if you have a master's degree in math.
Yeah.
No, I'm kidding. Yeah, I think it makes sense. Yeah.
It's just the variance. It's just some measure of their variance, their volatility.
So closer to one is bad and zero is like
less volatile.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and you can't take it too seriously because like if you're a star, you're going to have high variance.
Because you're scoring more points, so your points are going to vary more.
Is exactly. That what I'm
saying? Okay. Okay. Good.
So let's just take another second to talk about Roethlisberger since he's the number two projected quarterback and he is way above what his, according to that, he's way above what his ECR is right now.
ECR is 15 and MathBox has him at 2.
Exactly. And even more than that, the ECR overall is 124, which is like, I think a lot of people were targeting Roethlisberger as that kind of late round, I want to get the last quarterback off the board, feel like I loaded up on a whole bunch of other positions earlier in the draft.
Yeah, he's what you do when you punt and you try to scrape a passable quarterback at the very end.
Yeah, and so I think that what MathBox is sort of doing is like validating that strategy, especially when it comes to Roethlisberger. There's also a we're going to talk about Stafford in a minute, but Stafford is in a similar situation where he's somebody who's very late that MathBox seems to like a lot. I think that as far as Roethlisberger goes, though, it's mostly about the players that he has to work with on the offense. You know, his wide receivers and Antonio Brown and Bryant and, you know, playing with Le'Veon Bell and all those
Sammy
kind of things.
Coates
so
was in there too.
I think it's just a really high potential to score a lot of points and he's going to get a piece of that.
Yeah. And maybe that's what it's seeing. I know. I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I think it's also seeing a little bit of durability too. So
yeah.
Hopefully that's true because
I mean, his availability risk is pretty low. So I think that's right. Yeah.
So maybe our if in your fantasy playing brain you think that Ben Roethlisberger gets hurt all the time, MathBox says he doesn't really get
Not
hurt
true.
That much, or at least he keeps playing.
Right.
So
Dave, do you want to buzz through some of the other quarterbacks that it seems
go ahead. I mean, the Steelers. I just want to say the Steelers have won 6 Vince Lombardi trophies.
Oh,
I'm just making that clear.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thank I mean,
you.
We know,
Are
Chris.
Are you from Pittsburgh or something?
Yeah, we know that you're not a Steelers fan.
We can't be because we're from Cincinnati.
Yeah, and I'm from Cleveland, so you know we all are rolling around in those Lombardi trophies.
You don't have to admit that.
Hey, we made it to the World Series last year. I like that.
Yeah, well, you didn't win, so.
Yeah.
All right. Keep going here. Number 3, MathBox says, is Aaron Rodgers, which is basically expert consensus rank is number 1. That's not really that surprising. I don't think there's any finding there exactly other than the MathBox is accurately predicting some things that we already know.
Yep.
Another surprise is what you just mentioned. Matthew Stafford is number 4, which is kind of crazy. He's similar to Roethlisberger because in his expert consensus rank, he's 13 just at the position. So he's 100th overall. Which makes, you know, he's a steal as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's about half as valuable as Roethlisberger is projected to be. And, you know, basically 1/7 is or 2/7 as valuable as Russell Wilson is to be. So he's someone who is going to be over replacement, but not like crushing it.
Yeah. Not way over. I mean, we're looking at, the value versus, you know, tier 1 and 2 players here, so it's a little more forgiving, but it's including 20 players,
right?
And he's got positive value of about 1 point over replacement, so good but not amazing. Going down the list, Drew Brees is next. He's 5, you know, normally ranked 3. That's not surprising. Tom Brady is next at 6, normally ranked 2 or somewhere in that range at the top. Some sort of surprising things here. Andy Dalton is number 8.
Oh God.
And
God, Chris says.
Yeah. Yeah. He's right at about replacement value, but his obviously his normal rank is 16th at the position or about there. That's pretty surprising to me. I don't know.
That's great. I mean, one last player that I think it's worth pointing out here is that's a small value is Derek Carr.
Yeah.
Who's a player that I like in general. I had him on a couple teams last year. He did all right for me, a little frustrating, but he's got good guys to throw to, and Amari Cooper and Michael Crabtree. And, you know, that offense looks to be like it could be pretty good.
Yeah.
So.
He's 10 on our list. You know, ECR is 14 on ESPN. His ADP is number 7
yep.
right now as yep. of this recording.
Yep.
So maybe a bit of a deal.
So basically, just to summarize, like, we're talking about guys that MathBox projects higher than ADP or expert consensus rankings.
Yeah, so, these are kind of the green light players that, right. according and, to MathBox.
Yeah, like, and ones that have, like, positive value. So, like, it's not saying that we think that we're down on, I don't know, Matt Ryan or Drew Brees, just that we think they might be a little overvalued.
Could be, yeah. I mean,
could be.
So that's a good segue. Like, let's move to the players that are the opposite of that, the players that MathBox doesn't like. So Matt Ryan is one of those guys. He's number 9 on our list, but he's, based on his performance last year, he's pretty high up. He's number 4 at ADP in quarterback, and he's 4 in the expert rankings as well. So maybe shy away from him a little bit, according to MathBox.
Yeah, I mean, it definitely says that you shouldn't pay what the market wants to pay.
Right, exactly.
Last year he had a few really, really good games, but overall he was just above replacement. Like, I feel like we remember him being a stud, but I feel like defenses adjusted more, or maybe people started playing him more when he had, and then he started having some mediocre games after
that. And that is super consistent to what the predictions are saying, because he is right at replacement value. He's if you're playing a lot of quarterbacks for 20 teams. So he's 9th and
he's negative 0.79 if you're only looking at tier 1 quarterbacks. If you're
okay.
compared to the top 10 quarterbacks,
he's slightly below average
in the top 10.
In a top 10, yeah.
Only slightly above average in the top 20.
Yeah. So another guy that's kind of in a similar situation as Marcus Mariota.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting to see that the algorithm's kind of down on Marcus Mariota and on Jameis Winston. Both.
Yeah.
Now, I think people kind of like Mariota a little bit more this year than Winston, but it's interesting to see them kind of, after both having reasonably okay campaigns, they're kind of saying, hey, they're not really going to improve yet.
Right, right. I'm a little surprised by that, but I'm actually more surprised by number 18 on our list, which is Cam Newton.
Yeah.
It really does not like Cam, because he's number 7 in expert consensus ranks and 6 in ADP. He's 18 according to MathBox. So super cold on Cam this year.
Yep. Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of people are kind of still on the, remembering the history of Cam and maybe not realizing the way things are going to change.
Yeah. It's trending a certain way, and maybe the predictions are picking up on that.
Yep.
So,
and then I noticed the last guy on your list here. I mean, we're not going to talk about Andrew Luck. He's hurt. We're not sure what's going to go on with him.
Yeah, but MathBox hates him.
MathBox hates him anyway. Yeah.
Oh, really?
Also, didn't even make our list is Dak Prescott. Didn't even make our top 20 of what we're looking at right here.
So we should.
Yeah, that could be because he's a second year player. I mean, it's hard. I don't know. I remember that prediction. We might need to adjust that. It was something was wacky.
Yeah,
there.
I'm not sure. That's what I was going to say. It is so out of whack with everything else that we can see that maybe it is actually just needs to be adjusted because there's not enough data on him.
Right.
It's treating him like a normal second year player, and maybe he's not a normal second year player.
Yeah.
But maybe it's, you know, if it's so, he's number 40, according to the MathBox.
Is he really?
Yeah, that's what. Yeah.
Wow.
He's way, way down there. And he's 11 in expert and 9 in ADP currently. So he's way out of whack with the market. And, you know, maybe there's a reason to put some pause on that, because maybe it's accounting for some second year regression or something.
Right.
I don't know. Who knows?
Well, like we talked about in one of the other episodes, he only made it to average, though. In spite of him being super awesome and not costing anybody anything, he still was basically just replacement level.
I think he was more surprising that he was that good than actually being a player that you would have an advantage
with. Yeah, I mean, I think we should point out here, too, that in a game where we're looking at replacement level basically being the tail end of a tier one player, you know, that's essentially what the metric that we're talking about is.
Yeah.
Replacement level is actually pretty good. Like it's enough to get by.
Oh yeah.
And it'll come into play more with the other positions, because there are going to be people who have two guys that are below replacement, and that's where you really pick up a lot.
Absolutely.
So, what do you guys, like, how are you guys going to draft the quarterback, given all this?
You know, I'm always the guy who, you know, I don't know. I think I want to look a little bit more at the other ones before I think about my overall draft strategy. I've been super slammed at work and also trying to help get Outliers up. So my complete picture of 2017 is kind of being formed in this discussion right now in some ways. But I'm a guy who would be chasing after Stafford or Roethlisberger. And I think that this does not change my opinion on that, especially when my fallback could be Derek Carr or Andy Dalton.
Yeah, that is one of the things that's nice about this. I think when it, for the guys that it is predicting similar to ADP, it's kind of qualifying, because this thing is not reading reports. It doesn't know what ADP is. It doesn't have any of this other information.
Right.
It is doing this entirely on its own.
Yeah.
And so when it's accurate to ADP, accurate in quotes, as in the same, it's kind of qualifying.
Right.
It's seeing the same thing that everyone else is seeing.
Yeah.
But when it's different, it's like, oh man, maybe I should throw some cold water on this guy, or, you know, maybe bump this guy up a couple rounds.
Or maybe this guy's going to be a bargain.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what it's saying for Roethlisberger and Stafford, at very least. I'm not sure how much I believe the Dalton one, but...
God, Cincinnati fans so cold about the Red Rifle.
You know.
I think he's a really good... he's just choked in some big games, and I think, you know, I don't know. He's a good player though. Yeah. Move on from that. So I what I'm doing is I'm either just like from looking to this, because Russell Wilson is projected so high, and he's the fifth East, in terms of expert consensus rankings. Historically you can get the fifth quarterback at around the middle of the fourth round. Yeah. So either I'm going for him in the middle of the fourth round, or I don't know, maybe he slips to the fifth, or I'm waiting and getting one of those other guys.
Yeah, I mean, I think you do make a good point where it's a number like 3.5 in our projections is actually very high. And so if you buy it and you like Russell Wilson, it might be worth paying the ADP value for him, because, you know, if you like the way that we're talking, you like the whole Fantasy Outliers math box vibe, and you're like, hey, I think Russell Wilson is going to be worth it. Like, it's probably a good thing to remember that he's the one player who could really make a huge difference for you at the position, according to these projections.
Yeah.
So now it is, it's time to move on from quarterbacks to, I think, the position that actually causes the most angst amongst fantasy football players these days. In particular, these days, it used to be a little bit like a running backs with a gold standard, but now with two-headed monsters and all kinds of stuff, I think everybody is always stressing out about who's going to be good, who's going to pop off, what's going to happen. So what do we think about what the old math box is telling us about these guys?
Well, I think when I look at what math box is saying about running backs, there's the first couple of guys make a lot of sense to me. It is falling very much in line with expert ranks in ADP for David Johnson at number one, Le'Veon Bell at two, Devontae Freeman at three.
Yeah, and let me bust in here for a second, because it's actually following it, I think, all the way down to six of the top seven.
Yeah.
Basically, our algorithms agree with those being the best players at running back.
Yeah, so following that, like Melvin Gordon is at five, also at five in expert ranks. And also DeMarco Murray, which is six for us and is seven in expert. So it's really tight at the very top. Now,
yeah, let me say one thing about those six players too. Those six players are all first round picks. They're all first round picks according to expert consensus rankings. They're all also first round picks. I think as far as the way that MathBox is looking at it too, these are all positive value players.
Yeah.
The lowest one is worth 1 point. The highest one, David Johnson, is worth almost six. I mean, unfortunately, we're agreeing with everybody else that this guy is so far ahead of everybody else that he's going to be a huge plus for whoever has the first pick in your draft.
Yeah, absolutely. And Le'Veon Bell is 4.3.
Which is also a huge
number
in our
huge
system.
You know, yeah. Devontae Freeman is about three.
Right.
And it falls off fairly steeply from there. But those three guys, according to MathBox, are going to be huge.
Right.
Especially the first two.
Yeah.
So,
so let's talk about the weird stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, weird stuff. The thing that sticks out immediately,
like a sore thumb,
yeah, is number four is Bilal Powell.
Yeah,
which I was shocked when I saw that. I don't know why exactly it's saying that. His expert rank is 13th,
right?
So he's way out of line with the market.
Although I will say, I think that an expert rank of 13 recognizes the fact that people think in general he's going to get most of the carries there.
That's
that
true.
He's kind of going to kind of be the guy,
yeah,
in New York. The question is just, the thing that's really surprising is that just the amount of points per opportunity that are being assigned to him right now. And we are talking about PPR rankings tonight.
Oh, yeah.
Only PPR rankings tonight.
This is all PPR.
You know, Chris, I don't know if you, you know, that if that's a significant enough component of it to really bump him up that far. But what do you think?
About the points per opportunity?
Yeah.
I think that's... I mean, look, he's 0.1 points per opportunity above the average for running backs, so it's not crazy. And he does catch a fair amount of passes. He's not necessarily a guy who gets like a lot of short yardage touchdowns, I don't think. But that doesn't seem too out of whack to me, honestly. What did stand out to me was the opportunities per game, which I think is a little easier for us to adjust. Like, I mean, do you really, like, it's easy, like, for us to adjust
points. He's at 20, by the way.
Right. He's 20. At 20 opportunities per game.
Yeah. So, like, if you believe that, then keep it there. If not, I would move that down. But I don't know if I would change the points per opportunity. It's
yeah.
Seems pretty reasonable, honestly.
Yeah. And most of the other guys, their opportunities per game are at least in the 20s, low 20s. And, you know, Bell and David Johnson are in the mid 20s. So, right.
So keep in mind this. So something to keep in mind with this, like Chris is saying, is, hey, if something happens to Matt Forte, maybe you start to believe a little bit more in the opportunities per game that we have, that the algorithm is projecting for Bilal Powell right now. If you don't, you can adjust it down in that spreadsheet and see where Bilal ends up in the rankings. But so just to recap, this top end of running back, not super surprising once you get through the first few rounds. So the other one that or the first round anyway, the other one that stands out a lot is MathBox projects CJ Anderson to be the number 8th most valuable running back this year.
And he's 22 in expert ranks. So
right.
And that one's really surprising. This is one that, man, I got to be honest, I'm kind of just like not buying that. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't see how that happens.
Well, here's what I say. I am willing to take it. I'm one of those people who had him off the waiver wire a few years ago and
yeah.
won a
no,
few
I've
playoff
had
games
too.
From it.
He's done.
So if I'm paying a round 6 pick for him for real, like maybe I circle him on my list for 6 round pick. Cause right now his expert ranking is 57 overall. Like, I think the guy has a chance. Maybe Denver gets their offense together a little bit more this year, and he actually lives up to the number of opportunities per game that we have in the projection there.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's a good value in the 6th round to get a player that's just above replacement.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It's definitely possible. The next guy on the list is Mark Ingram, number 9, which is a little bit out of line with expert ranks at 17, 33rd overall. MathBox is basically saying it's definitely Mark Ingram over Adrian Peterson. Who
yeah,
is,
it
is
hates Adrian Peterson.
It really does.
Way down on the list.
Yeah, he's 21st yeah. in our ranks. So
that's crazy.
That's a pretty definitive answer by MathBox. I mean, yep. I've seen those two guys like lockstep in some people's ranks, and
right.
MathBox is saying no way, it's Ingram. So, Another kind of surprising one to me is Isaiah Crowell, and I'm just saying this very anecdotally. He's number 10 in our ranks and number 15 for experts. And, you know, he's going to get a lot of work, I assume. But Cleveland, are they going to be any good?
I think that they're – no, they're not going to be.
I mean, not going to be good. Are they going to be good enough to get him – the 20 opportunities per game that he's projected here?
Yeah, I mean, my gut on it is I've heard a lot of talk, you know, on podcasts that I listen to that feel like him being the 15th running back is too high already, and for us to come out and project that he's the 10th running back is kind of like even farther up the list.
It's gutsy.
So it's definitely, that's one that I'm going to look at long and hard before I go into it.
I mean, at the same point, you have Marshawn Lynch.
Who's 11th in our rank.
I would maybe take, if those two are available, I would take Marshawn Lynch in a heartbeat.
Oh, yeah. I think I would, too. I mean, look, guy coming back from quote-unquote retirement or whatever, who knows if he's got anything left, but, man, he's so much better than Crowell, I think.
Yep.
It's just as a raw talent.
And then a couple of other late-round guys that are looking pretty good, according to our projections, are Tevin Coleman, who we project to be the 14th best running back instead of the 27th. It's interesting to see both Atlanta running backs in the top 20.
It's basically saying they're both going to be usable.
Right. Tevin Coleman, not a world breaker, but definitely somebody who's going to, you know, not hurt you as much as other options that are available around when he was being drafted.
Yeah, so maybe he's a bit of a deal.
Yeah, like Spencer Ware a little bit.
Yeah, and one thing that we talked a little bit earlier about how it kind of is biased against rookies because it doesn't have a ton of information to predict them. And even second year guys, like it doesn't do a great job predicting them.
Well, we don't think it does.
We don't think it does, but we're going to find out this year for sure. The first rookie on this running back list is number 20, which is Joe Mixon.
Oh, man.
Which is kind of a nice finding. I mean, that's a bit of a stake in the ground. He's been crawling up draft boards for a while. There's a lot of buzz on him, but it's kind of qualifying actually to see him this high.
Yep.
Because, you know, like we said before, MathBox doesn't know anything about ADP.
Right.
He's a hype player, I feel like.
Right.
He's new and he's a new toy and he's this incredible physical talent, but MathBox is saying,
Him better than expert consensus. Yeah, exactly. I like him at number 20 when expert consensus is 24.
Right.
So my thoughts on Joe Mixon, like, kind of outside of the math box, like, the dude, he pops on tape. He is awesome. I think he's a star. But the thing is that on we ran an analysis on the how often, which teams have the teams that have the best running backs, like, do they do it with one guy or multiple guys? Only one team, maybe one and a half teams per year, have multiple running backs who have positive values. And with the Cincinnati Bengals, you have Jeremy Hill, who's the starter, Giovanni Bernard, and Joe Mixon. So, I mean, maybe Mixon, you know, gets more carries throughout the season. I think the Bengals are in win now mode. But I mean, it's just that situation. If it wasn't for that situation, I'd be really high on the guy.
Yeah. But you also got Bernard coming back from an ACL surgery. And
that's true.
I mean, who knows? But MathBox likes him. So I'm going to pay attention to him when I draft.
I think there's a chance that, like, just like, especially if you're in a keeper league or something, like, there's so much potential there. I wouldn't mind spending that draft pick on him, like, at that late stage in the draft.
Mm-hmm. So let's move real quickly to a few guys that MathBox does not like. First guy on this list, Todd Gurley, which, you know, is number 9 in expert consensus, but 23rd as far as MathBox says.
Oof.
So he's, you know, he's only projected to get like a little over 12 points per game. You know, we know he's a talented guy. I guess it thinks the Rams are going to be horrible.
Yeah.
So there you go. Another guy that it does.
By the way, no one's going to listen to that. Like, last year we had him low too. And I think a few people,
but this is what it's for.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. To straighten you out, to tell you, well, it doesn't matter if he's a good player. If his situation is horrible and no one's blocking for him,
right,
don't draft him.
Right. I mean, I took him last year. I'm not going to do it again this year. Yeah, I want to see how that team goes a little bit farther and see how he progresses through his career.
There's no way I'm going to own Todd Gurley in any league this year based off of just this information. So moving on, another guy that Mathbox doesn't like, Jordan Howard, which is really surprising. We have him 24, and he's sixth at the position for expert ranks. He is a second-year guy, so I think maybe he suffers from that bias against younger players. So maybe take that ranking with a little bit of a grain of salt. Bears are going to be terrible this year.
They are going to be terrible.
They're going to be awful.
Dave and Dave are in Chicago. In case you guys don't know that.
We'll find out.
Sad to say, I long ago abandoned the Browns for the Bears for some reason.
And now the Bears are almost as disappointing.
Just as bad.
Yeah.
So,
hey, well, at least we got rid of Cutler. Yes. I was so looking forward to him being out of the NFL, but he's not.
I have a secret love of Jay Cutler, to be honest. Like, I really like his pouty little face.
Oh.
You know?
Ugh, awful.
What a competitor.
What a competitor. Another guy that Mathbox doesn't like, Leonard Fournette, again, could be the rookie thing. We got him at 27. He's 12 in ECR. Mathbox is saying stay away. Christian McCaffrey is kind of the same thing. He's way down our list. He's 18 in ECR and 46 in our ranks. So way outside of anything that you'd...
Yeah, 46 is like, you're never going to be able to pay.
Yeah, so never going to get him.
That's kind of just like all those guys... together is kind of interesting. Like any one of them by themselves, you might say, well, maybe that's an anomaly in the predictions or whatever. But I mean, there isn't a ton of data for the rookies, but there is some. So the fact that it's low on all of them, I don't know.
Yeah,
I mean,
it doesn't like them. Not at running backs, at least.
I think Ezekiel Elliott last year has pushed some of these rookies up in ECR this year. I'm just throwing that out there. I don't really know.
Dude, it's a total recency bias. I'm with you 100%. The algorithm also hates Ezekiel Elliott, by the way, but there's all kinds of other complications around that too, just because of, you know, if we average out the number of opportunities he's going to get this year, it's just going to be very low.
Wait, you don't think he's going to get as many carries as last year?
Well, I mean, just with a suspension, so you just have to take that into account when you're planning.
He's out six games.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's half the season, and they have a bye in those first six, so he's really only going to play for six games for you in fantasy until you get into the playoffs, so plan accordingly. We don't have much else to say about him other than that.
Yeah. So, it only projected him at 12 opportunities per game. I would move that up to like 18 or 20 or something. So
okay. You think that's out of whack. Yeah. I mean, that does sound out of whack based off of all the guys that are actually good running backs.
So he's actually more of a replacement level, guy, I would say.
Okay.
I don't know. I don't know.
But you have to pay the risk to have him because you only get to play him for half the year. Right. So the question is where is half of a replacement level? What's half a replacement level running back worth to you? Mm-hmm. Is it going to be number 10 overall right now is the ADP for Elliott?
Not 10 overall, 10.
Yeah, sorry, 10, not overall, 10 in running backs. That's a lot. That means that you would take, you would basically have to take him over, someone else, another player similar. Bilal Powell, for example.
I mean, just hearing that, like, hey, pick Bilal Powell.
It's absurd.
It sounds crazy.
Totally absurd. Okay.
A couple more guys I just wanted to mention really quick. Guys that may be late round values, according to Mathbox. I'm just going to rattle these off. James White, Theo Riddick, Duke Johnson, Travaris Cadet, and I don't even know who this guy is. Tariq Cohen? I don't know. He's a rookie, I think. Anyway.
I don't know.
Okay. The James White thing is kind of about getting a piece of the Patriots, right?
Yeah, for sure.
Like, let's see what happens with that. Mm-hmm. Theo Riddick is a guy who I've used a bunch of times in the last couple of years in favorable what look like favorable matchups, because he will all of a sudden have two touchdowns and go off for 3 weeks in a row and then disappear again. So, you know, we actually have Riddick at running back 16 overall.
Yeah.
If you look at this, so we like him a lot.
Oh, sorry.
More than
yeah.
The,
not, I, you know what? Maybe saying late round values is a bit of a misleading term. They're actually guys that have decently high points per opportunity.
Right. Well, that makes sense. I mean, you know, I think for a starting, for someone yeah. who might start in a running back, saying an eighth round pick is that's late enough round.
Yeah,
I
sure.
think.
Okay.
And some of those late rounds, I mean, you might want to start drafting on points per opportunity projections instead of necessarily opportunities per game or value.
Yeah. I think that's true, because we found now Tyler from our team did an analysis about what leads to a breakout player. And we, you know, someday we'll get around to publishing this study
in the later rounds. You mean,
right? Later round picks, like, you know, last 2/3 of the draft kind of pick, what makes a breakout player. And I think what he found basically was more than half of the people who really popped were because of change in situations and other players.
Right. It wasn't due to things like injuries. It wasn't due to coaching changes or right. team changes or anything. But there were a lot of players that had murky situations going into the year, and something changed. They got promoted or right. something like that. And they got a lot more opportunities and they were able to use them.
So if they're players who look like they have high points per opportunity, then a increase in opportunities would make a huge difference. Right. That's kind of the point.
Yep.
So who do you think is going to get injured this year? No.
Boy, I don't know how to predict that, but I know that you just wrote an article about it. Do you have some thoughts?
Theo Riddick had a high availability risk. That's, I mean,
meaning he's going to get hurt, or it thinks it's going, he's going to get hurt.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's, I think the availability risk, was we projected games available, and then just like, found that relative to their position. And I think the average for running backs is around 0.3 on a scale of 0 to 1. He's at 0.52, which is in the top 5. Doug Martin's also up there. So I don't know. I mean, it's all probabilities. He could easily play all 16 games. I hope he does. I don't know. It's just something to keep in mind. He kind of showed up there. I think Matt Forte did as
well.
That's
a great word of caution. Yeah. Forte did too. That's a great word of caution. It's also a good plug for the article that we just published on our Medium blog, medium.com/fantasy-outliers, that talks a little bit about injury risk and also some of the people that really stuck out to us this year as being risky. All right. So that's kind of our thoughts on running back in general. You know, I think Chris asked a great question about quarterbacks that I'll ask right now, which is basically how does this mean you're going to think about running backs? I mean, there's clearly the kind of Sterling platinum guys that you still want to get and that we validate you wanting to get. But what do we think about some of these outliers?
Well, I think we have two guys that are kind of interesting to me, not necessarily interesting in a good way, but Bilal Powell at 4 and Isaiah Crowell at 10, which are, you know, significantly higher than expert ranks. There's no way. I think they have basically the same situation. They're decently talented running backs, or you know, they're not terrible guys, right?
I think they might be very nice people and read to people at the old folks' home on the weekends. I think they're both terrible running backs.
You think they're terrible?
But
all right. Dang, all right.
Fine. But go ahead.
But they are on objectively bad teams.
Yeah. Yes.
So it's almost the same thing. Like, for whatever reason, Mathbox thinks that these guys are going to get a lot of opportunities and they're going to do a decent amount with them. I don't know if that's true.
Yeah.
But I'm definitely not taking Bilal Powell at the 28th overall.
Yeah, which is where he's going right now. I wasn't interested there. I don't know if I'm more interested now after seeing this data come out of the algorithm. It's the same thing as with Isaiah Crowell. I don't think I want to pay the 31st overall pick for a running back on the Browns.
Yeah.
I did that before. Thank you, Trent Richardson.
Yeah. I don't think I would. I don't think I would touch him until the 5th round or something. I mean, I'd have to have at least 4 other players
before I was interested.
Yeah.
I will say,
because you're stuck with him. If he sucks, you're stuck with him. He's a starter.
Yes. I will say the players that spark my interest a little bit here as being possible values are CJ Anderson and Mark Ingram, mm-hmm. are two that I would definitely take a look at, maybe grabbing a little bit early if I get a chance to. Ingram, it's hard to get a shot to grab early because he's being drafted so early. But, you know, being in the fifth round or something like that and getting a shot at CJ Anderson, maybe I'm not sure what I want to do there and I want to get a third running back, mm-hmm. maybe to kind of start building that flex, like, bench possibilities.
Yeah.
Depending on how the draft goes, I kind of like what the algorithm is saying about CJ Anderson. Chris, do you have any thoughts?
I'm thinking about Bilal Powell. I mean, I think if none of us draft him, I mean, like, this makes me think of Moneyball. Like, he's kind of like a smaller guy. Like, you kind of don't want him to be really good. I don't know. But at the same, like, I kind of would be interested in drafting him just because, I don't know, running, people go after the...
Would you take him that high, though? Well, would you take him with your third round
everyone
pick?
Everyone chases running backs, though, so, like, you got to do something. I mean, I don't know.
It's
but
true.
That said, before we get to tight ends, I mean, like, people like Jordan Reed are available at that point, so I would probably go with someone like Jordan Reed over Bilal Powell at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We had some really spicy stuff to talk about with Jordan Reed.
Yeah,
just
we'll
a little
get
preview
that.
For later. So.
All right. That'll be good. I don't know.
Yeah, pause that
I mean,
thought.
I think I agree with what you guys said. Just like, hey, if I'm drafting in the first round, I'm pretty much following expert consensus rankings if I'm getting a running back. Otherwise, maybe I take a shot on Bilal Powell. CJ Anderson, Mark Ingram, Marshawn Lynch even seem pretty...
Yep.
Pretty solid, mm-hmm. like mid round guys. I don't know.
Well, mid round being the third round.
Yeah, mid round for running backs,
for
right? Because, like you said, everybody's chasing at the beginning there.
Right.
So,
yeah. So I asked my brother in law, Joel, he's a huge Jets fan, big fantasy player. I asked him about Bilal Powell, and he said, not sure, running back by committee. Jets are going to bad awful this year. Running game might not be reliable because Jets will always be trailing. I see them throwing more and lots of picks.
So he's not taking Powell.
Not interested. Yeah.
All right.
I think, by the way,
damning.
I think his assessment is totally fair.
Yeah.
Okay. So moving on from running backs now to position that I think has become, you know, especially since we're talking about PPR, this position has become definitely what's the highest scoring position for everybody now. We're going to talk about wide receivers.
Yeah, so first on the list, very, very predictably, is Antonio Brown. Mathbox is nailing that one. Second on the list, again for PPR, is Julio Jones, which is also the same as the expert ranks. And those guys have really good value over replacement.
Yeah, very, very high, like close to the best running backs as well.
Yeah, exactly. Antonio Brown is 3.5 points above replacement per week, and Julio Jones is projected to be 2.2, essentially. So really good value there. The third one, I think, actually the third and the fourth are a little bit way different than what you might expect. Mathbox says that Demaryius Thomas is third, and Julian Edelman is fourth. Now, Demaryius Thomas is expert rank is 19, and Edelman is 20.
So they're next to each other in expert consensus rankings, you know, 17 slots later. They're next to each other in our projections as well.
Yeah, weird,
way up
right?
towards the top.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I mean, what is going on there? When I first saw this, I thought, oh, maybe I believe a little bit of the Edelman stuff for some reason. I don't know why I say that. And then I was looking at the Demaryius Thomas thing at third and going like, I don't know how this could possibly be, you know, who's throwing him that ball?
I mean, someone terrible.
Well, yeah, exactly.
You know, what's interesting though, is that it's been what, two years. They've had 2 years. I mean, the 2 years ago, Peyton Manning was still their quarterback, but he wasn't, you know, the same Peyton Manning. And then last year they had, I don't know, a different
Trevor Siemian.
Yeah. And it's like, it's the same type of situation this year, and Mathbox it's not just like completely
that.
Random.
Yeah. It's not a hangover from Peyton Manning. That's basically what we're saying. Like,
right.
It's not just projecting those numbers forward and screwing it all up. Like, it knows what happened last year.
It ain't no
fool.
Yeah,
I mean, the one thing, if you look at the breakdown of both of these guys, it basically says that they're going to have some of the most opportunities per game of anybody at wide receiver.
Right.
So I mean, if you look at the opportunities per game that we're projecting, 11. Antonio Brown and Julio Jones lead that number, at least as far as the top 20 goes. And then right after that, Demaryius Thomas and Julian Edelman are next. Now, their points per opportunity are different. You know, Edelman's is lower, Demaryius is higher, but they're both projecting around that like 11 opportunities per game. And I guess that makes a big difference. You know, yeah. if they're, we're, you know, imagining that we're going to target them a lot, it's, at least it looks like in the algorithm, that's making a good amount of difference.
So, mm-hmm. yeah, if you don't buy that, if you don't buy Demaryius Thomas getting 10 and a half targets per game, if you move it down to 9, then he's like slightly below replacement. So,
which still only puts him at 10, by the way. That would still put him at 10, which is still a full 10 spots above where the market is paying
for
him
right
now. Yeah.
Yeah. So, next on this list that I think is interesting is number 9 for us, which is Michael Crabtree, which expert rank is 15.
That is interesting.
Yeah. I mean, He was a guy that I was actually looking at to get in later rounds because I thought he had been drafted 6th, 7th round in previous years, and the year before that he was even 10th round. I don't know, he was a very late round guy, and he has outperformed. He's had positive value no matter where he's drafted.
Yeah.
For the last couple of years, and so I thought maybe that would happen again. Looking at ADP, looking at expert ranks, no, everyone sees it.
Everyone's seeing him.
Yeah. So he's 15th in expert, and you know, MathBox has got him even higher at 9.
Yeah, got him above Amari Cooper.
Yeah.
I mean, by the way.
Yeah. Weird, right?
It basically swapped their positions. Our algorithm has swapped Crabtree and Amari Cooper.
But they were closer than.
They're very close. They're a lot closer than people thought last year.
And that's what it's saying.
Yep.
Another guy, which this isn't really a big green light from the math box, but Golden Tate is a little bit higher than expert ranks. He's 10 in our list and 14.
Yep.
For experts. The next one I think is really interesting. I stole your...
there it is. Email tweet review, please.
Yeah, it's really...
Not drink. So we're not playing drinking games.
Right.
It's tweeting games.
Yeah. Man, are you a lawyer or something?
I like to follow rules, Chris.
drinking game rules.
You can tell me if you think this is interesting, but number 11 on our list is Terrell Pryor.
Yes.
Number 22.
That's who I was looking at just now.
Yeah. He's way up there. And, you know, he was another guy that I was looking at, just like Michael Crabtree, just thinking like, oh, man, this guy was good last year, really good. In whatever converted position or whatever.
Yep.
And now he's on a different team. He's got a better quarterback,
yep.
better offense,
yep.
everything. He's poised for a breakout.
Yeah.
Just anecdotally, he's poised. Like situationally, he's poised.
Yeah, I mean, basically what the math looks like is that Pryor is sort of like a, you know, two-ish round bargain. If you get him at the in the middle of the 6th round or the middle of the 5th round, he's going at the same spot. As if he's going there, then his value is going to be returned at a 3rd round pick. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah. So expert. So historically in 10 team PPR leagues, you have, I think you said 23. That's like middle of the 6th round is Terrell Pryor. So right. If you get him early 6th round, late 5th, seems like a pretty good deal there.
Yeah. Yeah, he's definitely a player. He's a player I had on a couple teams last year and thought he was really good. Of course, he came off the waiver wire, I think, if I remember right, last year. But I'm definitely looking at him now to provide a little bit of bump.
Mm-hmm. What about Larry Fitz?
Yeah, I mean, he's a slight value at 12 for us and 17 in UCR. I think he's just a really stable player. I mean, we're projecting him at a little over 10 opportunities per game. And, you know, he gets decent production, not great production out of those. So, you know,
he's always solid.
Yeah. He's always solid. And MathBox is projecting that.
And interestingly, you might think, oh, he's getting old. He's past his prime. He might get injured. Well, in our analysis, we found that injury risk for wide receivers and tight ends kind of stays consistent. Up to like 10 years in the league, 10, 11 years in the league.
Right.
So
okay.
I, You know, I mean, maybe he's lost a step, you know, that's possible, but as far as injury risk, I wouldn't worry about it.
Yeah.
Okay. The next two guys I think are I'm not going to say interesting again.
you just did though.
Yeah, the first rookie or second year guy, Tyreek Hill. We have at 18, and expert ranks is 23. He's been, I think he's a hype player this year, and basically, Mathbox is agreeing.
Yeah,
and even upping the ante a little bit. Now I do want to say, for Tyreek Hill especially, we don't have great numbers on these guys. The rookie and second year predictions are a little shaky. His numbers that have come back are a little bit different than the guys around him, and I'm a little worried that we don't have a great, that Mathbox doesn't have a great handle on him.
Well, let's talk about what's really standing out on his chart here, and that is his points per opportunity crushes everybody else for some reason. He's projected at 1.92 points per opportunity. That is massive when you're saying that Antonio Brown only has 1.6 and Julio Jones has 1.69.
Yeah, and he's getting supposedly 8 opportunities a game, which is low on this list. He's actually the lowest guy, and I think.
For opportunities per game, the value is so high.
I actually adjusted that up because I think it was like a 3 or something. So that was a manual adjustment.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so there you go. We're not totally sure about Tyreek Hill, or at least Mathbox is not.
Right.
And you know what? How many times have you heard that Tyreek Hill is the fastest guy in the NFL? None. Maybe none. Well, John Ross. John Ross is the fastest guy. The Bengals drafted him this year, 4.240, won the record at the combine. Damn. And still, I've seen like 2 or 3 articles from ESPN saying, fastest guy in the NFL, Tyreek Hill.
Right.
So annoying.
All aboard the hype train.
Yeah, exactly. Right?
Yeah.
So when I look at your, you know, we're coming down to the end of our top 20 here. Those last couple of guys on the list too are pretty cool. I almost said interesting, but I you know, these are two players that I like a lot. Randall Cobb and Martavis Bryant. Mm-hmm. Both, I think, are, you know, we're projecting them to be values against where they're being drafted. We have them at 19 and 20. The ECR has them at 29 and 35 within the position. So pretty big bump up there if you can get them towards that kind of like pick 80, pick 100 kind of zone. You could probably get some good returns. You know, I think people have been waiting for Randall Cobb to come back for a couple of years.
Yeah, so maybe he's been a little disappointing. I've had him a few times.
Yeah, maybe at the very least what we're saying is he's going to be someone who is that kind of end of the tier 2 of wide receivers.
Yeah. So let's talk about some guys that Mathbox doesn't like.
Yep.
First guy that I have marked here is Doug Baldwin, which is not a huge discrepancy between what Mathbox is saying and expert ranks. We have him at 13. They have him at 8. Similar thing with Amari Cooper. We have him at 14. Everybody else has him at 11-ish. The one that's kind of surprising to me, actually two, is we have AJ Green and Dez Bryant at 15 and 16, and expert ranks have them at 7 and 10.
Inside the top 10.
Inside the top 10, which is where they normally are, right? Some of the best wide receivers in the game, supposedly. Mathbox doesn't like them so much.
Yeah.
I mean, I think...
Yeah, and let's talk about what that means, too, by the way. Having them at the end of the top 20 instead of the end of the top 10 means that they go from being players that are replacement value or a slight positive value to being people who are below. So it is a little bit kind of harmful in that way, where you could feel like those were players that you were counting on to build your team, mm-hmm. where they're actually people that you're sort of mitigating risk against.
Right. It seems hard to believe, just if you use conventional wisdom or whatever, because they're supposed to be these ultra stud guys.
And they may be,
but for whatever reason, it's seeing something that it doesn't like, and it's telling you to cool off on them.
Well, I can speak to AJ Green. I mean, he's at least the most talented wide receiver in the NFL, but the Bengals, they have to...
I don't know if I totally agree
with
that.
At least.
At least.
Wow. Okay.
I mean, at least the top 3. I don't know. I've seen him make some Like his hand-eye coordination is I don't think anyone else is better.
Better than Odell Beckham?
I don't know. Yeah, he's pretty good too. But all right. I mean, AJ Green's a stud, but the Bengals scheme differently for every game, and they have a lot of weapons. They have Tyler Eifert. They have
right.
You know, we talked about Joe Mixon, all their running backs. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It's not like it's Jameis Winston just chucking it to what's his name? Mike Evans. Ah, it's late. Sorry. That I think that's why he's low.
Okay. Two guys that I think I'm not totally sure about, or at least Mathbox isn't totally sure about. We have Michael Thomas ranked super, super low.
Yeah.
Second year guy. We also have the same thing for Brandon Cooks. These guys are, Michael Thomas, Mathbox says 40, Brandon Cooks 29, and they're super high for everybody else in ADP and expert at 6 and 12. So I think I don't think that's totally accurate because they're second year guys. I think it's just a lack of good data there. I'm sort of ignoring that rank and use your own judgment to fill in where you think they should be. A couple of guys that might provide some good late round value. We already talked about Martavis Bryant a little bit. He's pretty good. We actually also have Ted Ginn in here, marked as 22 from the math box. He's actually all the way down at 51 in the expert ranks. I'll rattle these off real quick. Kenny Stills at 31 from us, 59 for expert. Also, Mike Williams, who's a rookie, we have him at 42, and he's 99 in expert. And there's... I'll mark J.J. Nelson as well, 45 in our ranks, and 66 in ECR. So, you know, note those guys. You can ignore it if you want, but
I mean,
you know, they're pretty far down the list, but you know, they might provide some. It might be guys you want to take a shot on.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the one thing I would throw in here too is the one guy that we haven't talked about that everybody loves to talk about how awesome he is Odell Beckham.
Yeah,
we have him as being basically, you know, mostly accurately priced. We project him to be a little worse than the third best, but we project him to be the sixth best wide receiver. Not that big of a difference. Still somebody who's giving you positive value on your team. If you love Odell, feel good about taking him.
Yeah, we skipped over a couple of guys like that.
Mike Evans, Jordy Nelson. They're all kind of like in line. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Jordy Nelson had a high points per opportunity too, which I think should keep in mind. If his targets go up, then he could be a stud. I mean, he is a stud, but he could be higher than what expert consensus rankings is. Also, like, of those names you mentioned, Bro Dave, like Kenny Stills and JJ Nelson had high points per opportunity ratings. So,
that's probably what's doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah. A couple other players that we like towards the end of the projections, by the way, that we think are accurate as far as like getting what you paid for. Alshon Jeffery, Devontae Adams, Stephon Diggs, and Keenan Allen. All of those guys look like they're right in line with what, you know, with the ECR. So you won't get a bargain, but hopefully as long as they don't get injured, you won't lose that value with them either. So all that being said about the loves and the hates among the wide receivers that we have, how do you guys feel about wide receiver at kind of a big picture level? What are you thinking about doing? Does this influence picking a running back versus a wide receiver in PPR, since that's what we're talking about tonight? Or what do you guys think as far as the position goes overall?
It seems like it's maybe generally speaking easier to find draft value at wide receiver this year than running back. So maybe I stick with ECR early on and then try to get some some sneaky value at wide receiver? I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, I think if you look at just, you just compare the kind of value versus the tiers in the absolute numbers that we get between running back and wide receiver, the numbers in running back go more negative faster than the numbers in wide receiver do. So the, what you get to on our rating scale in running back, by the time you get to the 20th best running back, is a negative 2.6. At that same position in wide receiver, it's only a negative 1.6. So I think that does sort of
belie.
Yeah, that 1 point is a big deal. I think it sort of belies that the position is a little bit flatter. You know, people have been saying that this year as far as draft strategy goes. So I think that this sort of means that, you know, our projections are sort of in line with that.
And that falls in line with historically, like, we've seen that the wide receiver position like tends to sort of like taper off in terms of value, whereas the running back position is like, actually it's pretty random.
Yeah, it's very noisy.
Yeah, but it does taper off faster.
Yeah, it tapers off faster. And it, so basically in order to get down to a similar level of wide receivers to running backs, you have to get to wide receiver 30. So basic, or right around 30. So it looks like they're basically outpaced by one entire round or one entire roster spot of wide receivers.
Yeah. The other thing that I noticed about wide receiver is that when we did the Where to Find Value in Your Draft podcast, we were talking about the pick numbers and what the returns are.
Yeah.
And the first wide receiver pick tends to be crazy, crazy high.
Yeah.
And it's interesting that the predictions here actually bear that out, because Antonio Brown is a 3.5 above replacement per week, which is way above everyone else.
Right. I mean, it's way above everybody else. It's not above running back this year, though.
Well,
that's
yeah,
true.
Because David Johnson is projected to be like a 5.5. So
yeah, that is true. Yeah. But okay, but against other guys at his position,
correct,
is way higher. So yeah, it's actually predicting its own finding from previous years.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
Well, it's kind of nice.
Yeah, it doesn't know that. I mean, the math.
No,
box,
it doesn't
yeah.
know that. Which is that's why it's cool, because yeah. it's validating itself.
What about while you guys were talking about, did we mention T.Y. Hilton?
No, we skipped over him.
Was that on purpose?
No, I mean, it's just, he's somebody who, I guess he projects as a first round pick for us when he's
number
five.
You know,
everybody else has him as a second round pick.
Yeah, I'm not taking him in the first round.
No way.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't take him in the first round either, but basically what that says is if you go running back and you want to try to get somebody that's going to give you better value back in the second round, maybe you look at T.Y. Hilton to be that person.
Yeah.
You know,
I'm going to let somebody else take him.
What's his variance rating like, Chris? Do you have that in front of you?
T.Y. Hilton's variance. That's a good question. He has above average points per opportunity. His variance week to week is at the max.
Is 0.99?
Yeah, it's 0.99.
Yeah, he is all over the place. Yeah. But also Antonio Brown's
yeah,
is
Yeah, Antonio
one.
Brown's is also high. His
but that's
availability
because he's scoring
risk is
40
very low.
Points a game.
Yeah that's yeah. different.
I mean, it's tough.
So it's hard to say.
It's tough. I mean, with not being sure what's going on with Andrew Luck or when he's going to play, I think, you know.
You can take him. I'm out.
He's always been someone that I've kind of looked at kind of sideways.
Yeah, me too. I've never liked him.
So.
Especially this year.
I will say for my part, I'll definitely be looking at Edelman and Thomas. I mean, basically, one thing that's interesting about these projections here is that this is saying that Edelman beats Brandon Cooks out as far as Tom Brady's affections
go. Oh,
yeah,
for sure. Yeah, we didn't even think about that.
It's surprising, I think, because a lot of people are definitely expecting it to be the opposite. Mm-hmm. For me, that means that I'll be looking to take Julian Edelman around his average draft position, because I think he's a guy that's good, especially in a PPR league, and we'll kind of take it from there.
For sure.
But, you know, if he's a sneaky value in that fourth round, or, you know, it's hard to say something is sneaky value in the fourth round, but somebody who can return a lot of extra in that round, I think
well,
he
if he's
be
worth
it.
A first round pick or a second round pick, he is a sneaky value.
Yeah, exactly. Oh, you know, the one person that we didn't talk about that everybody should be talking about or should be thinking about is DeAndre Hopkins. So as far as our projections go, the projections kind of hate him a little bit, but not a ton.
No.
Like they basically say he's going to be number 17 wide receiver as far as wide receivers go, and everybody else is paying the number 13 wide receiver for him. You know, that's the kind of stuff that can happen within one round. So it's kind of hard to come to say that somebody's reaching if they.
Right.
If
it's
they,
not really a finding. I mean, it's.
Right. Yeah, I just wanted to point it out.
Closely to ADP.
Because he's sort of a controversial person that, yeah. You know, it's worth pointing out, hey, this is very close to what the consensus rankings are. All right, so now that we're through the meat of the predictions, as far as the really big point scorers, we have one position left to talk about that is important because I hate defense and kickers, but we'll get to that in a minute. Let's talk about tight ends.
Yeah,
they're all important.
I know they're all important.
This one gets a little bit weird.
So tight
this
ends
is where we get weird. Right? It's like midnight.
Yeah.
We do get weird. I mean, it is coming up on midnight on the East Coast. It's almost 11 here in Chicago. And we have something to talk about, I think, as far as the tight ends go. Why don't we just kick off with the big thing? So we haven't told you who our highest projected value player is in any of our predictions in PPR.
Right. When you sort by just pure value over replacement.
Right.
The absolute top player at any position is Jordan Reed.
Right. And it's,
you hate that. You have so much.
I have a lot of questions.
Questions as well. And okay, so let's
so
look
Jordan
at,
Reed rates as a 7.55. Just for scale, David Johnson was what, a 5.5?
Yeah.
And he's 5.7. Okay. And he's the other highest ranked player.
And
he's number two.
Brown is 3.5.
Right. So we're basically saying that Jordan Reed is worth 7.5 more than the average at his position.
Yeah.
So he's going to earn your team 7.5 points per week.
He's going to earn your team a combination of, hang on, he's going to earn your team the same amount that David Johnson plus a good, like LeSean McCoy, will earn for your team in a given week together.
Over replacement,
okay.
Yes.
Okay, so that's, okay, that's, the metric we're looking at is value versus tiers 1 and 2.
Right.
It makes more sense because that's comparing him to the top 20 tight ends. Really, we should be looking at the value versus tier 1 only,
true.
Which is the top 10 running, top 10 tight ends.
It's still
and
five.
In that case, he's still at plus 5.8 right. points per week, which is slightly higher than David Johnson.
Right. Yeah. So if you dig into what it's predicting numbers wise, points per opportunity for Jordan Reed, supposedly 2.0, which is extremely high, right? And opportunities per game for a tight end, 10, which is, I think, the highest guy on the board by a good margin.
It's the highest by one entire opportunity.
Yeah. So super high on both of those. Are you guys buying this?
I'm going to let Chris go first.
Me? No, you're just going to rip me apart. Go for it, dude.
No. My main concern with Jordan Reed is mostly just like he never plays all the games in a given year. So I think that he's definitely, you know, in my mind, given where he used to go, I would have looked for him as someone that I would have targeted. Now that he's going in like the third round in a 12-team league or the fourth round in a 10-team league, I'm a little less interested just because of that injury risk and because there's some other players I could grab there. But at the same time, like if I'm converting over to this fully value-based fantasy outliers way of thinking, it's really hard to not look at that for a long time and go, geez, I mean, that's just a way better value than you would get in the in the fourth round for any of the other players that are similarly ranked or similarly ADP'd.
Or any round.
I mean, any round is what it's also projecting, but... So I don't hate the player. I am curious about like the calculation.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. You want to look into what math, like all the millions of, splits that the math box tried to find.
Well, I don't know. I don't know if I could do that.
Out of 12 data sets.
I'm curious about like your
thousands of columns.
I am curious about your thoughts about this being the standout player of our first year predictions.
Yeah. Well, okay. to speak to availability risk, injury risk. So the common knowledge, right, is that Gronk and Jordan Reed at the top end of the tight end position is injury prone, right? Lots of people say that. We looked at the historical returns on the week started at the top end of the tight end position, and it's actually a little bit above running back. It's not as good as receiver, but it's actually not as bad as common knowledge says it is. So MathBox thinks his availability risk is a little less than average for Jordan Reed this year.
Yeah.
So if you believe that, I mean,
yeah,
that available, well, like with that value projection, I think that's a good combination.
Yeah. But so. Chris, that I think what is a little bit maybe misleading about that is that you're generalizing.
I mean, there's specific players with specific problems.
Right. And that number that, you know, 9.5 games started for the top tight ends, like that's generalized over years mm-hmm. and over different players. So it's not specific to Gronk. It's not specific to Jordan Reed.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan Reed could get another concussion and retire.
I mean, he did just get activated off the pup. He had a bad toe.
Yeah.
But still, I mean, he was hurt in the preseason. He's always hurt. So, I think it's really interesting that it has him this high. It makes me think that there's something there, but I mean, I'm not going to take him that high. I don't think I can.
So what if he fell a little bit below that in your draft? Like his ECR is 34. So that's fourth round. That's mid fourth round, right?
Yeah.
What if he fell there or below? Like, what would you do?
I think it's kind of what I said in one of the other podcasts. If I felt good about the guys that I had before,
yeah,
I might, because it's I know he's a good player, but I also know that Gronk is a good player, and I know that Travis Kelce is a good player too.
I gotta be honest, I don't know if Gronk is going to be a good player again. I've kind of lost the faith. Like, I mean, as far as what he's actually going to pull off, I still think Jordan Reed is pretty incredible. And maybe Gronk is too. It's just you get to watch him so infrequently these days that it's like, who knows what's going on?
Well, okay, but to that point, Gronk is fourth on our list.
Yep.
And he's one in expert consensus, obviously.
Yep.
So MathBox is a little cold on him.
Yeah.
And he has a high availability risk too.
Yeah.
I mean, he actually has a high risk. Interesting that he has a high risk and Jordan Reed does not.
MathBox
has spoken. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. It is interesting though.
Yeah. You said it again. The next one.
Email us.
Zach Ertz. We have is number two, which is seventh in expert. And Travis Kelce is right behind him at three, which is not really a surprise because he's two. I mean, he's been two. I think pretty much everybody agrees on that.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing that we could talk about here for a minute too is, you know, Chris wrote an article for the blog a couple of weeks ago about why you should, two reasons you should consider drafting a top three tight end. And it's one thing is we are on our rankings, actually they're different from what the consensus is on what those top three tight ends are.
Yeah.
So for one thing, you know, historically looking by, so Chris, this is the analysis you did there was looking by ADP. We are pretty good at having the people who are the best three at that position actually be the best three scorers at that position, right?
Yeah. So like last year you had, was it Gronk, Delanie Walker, Travis Kelce, I think.
Right.
I don't know. The first five guys produced positive value.
Right.
Whereas for running back, you had Ezekiel Elliott and David Johnson, but you also had
a bunch of misses.
Adrian Peterson and Todd Gurley. And that happens every year. So it's like, you know who the top ends are going to be, who the top tight ends are going to be if they stay healthy. Like, that's kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
And that's like, I don't know. That's pretty important, I think, for a game as like dynamic as football.
Yeah. So I guess my question is, what do you think about the fact that that MathBox has given us a couple of other people that it predicts to be the top three people that don't fall in line with what the consensus rankings are?
I mean, that's going to happen. Like year to year, there's
variance,
differences.
Yeah.
I think, yeah, for Zach Ertz, I think it's interesting. You could get him in the what, mid seventh round, and he's a plus. There's a, so like first is the top 10 tight ends. There's only three guys. Well, four guys. Gronk's like, it's projecting him at replacement level, which is crazy. Three or four guys who are at or above replacement, and Zach Ertz is one, and you can get him in the seventh round. Like, I don't know. I think it has, like, it's pretty much in line with expert consensus rankings, besides for Zach Ertz, right?
Yeah, I mean, it makes a big difference in tight end because you're talking about basically, you know, the person who's projected to be the second tight end, Travis Kelce, is going at pick 26, and Ertz is going at pick 64. So, like you said, that is a pretty big uptick if you actually get to take that player and they deliver on that. I mean, I could see doing that as you know, taking a shot at that at in the middle of that seventh round for sure. I mean, just depends on if I feel like I'm thin at running back or I need to chase something else. But we should also keep in mind that there's very few picks that claim to give you positive value that late in the draft. A lot of times it's minimizing negative value when you get to that point.
Yeah.
So he might be the only opportunity to do it when you're in the seventh round.
A couple other guys that were, I guess, Mathbox is close on to the consensus is Jimmy Graham. Mm-hmm. We have him at six, and so does the expert ranks. Tyler Eifert is our seventh, and expert ranks has got him at 10, so that's not that surprising. Mathbox is a little bit low on Kyle Rudolph at 8, a little bit low on Delanie Walker, actually almost exactly 8 and 9. But actually, Greg Olsen's is a bit of a surprise to me. We were talking about him in the tight ends podcast last time and saying how, you know, maybe he's the third tight end or the fourth tight end. Maybe he's one of those high value guys. Mathbox is telling us that he's not, because we have him at 10 and everybody else has him at 3.
Yeah. So I remember I said on the podcast that we did about tight ends that's the guy I'd be looking at out of that tier.
Because he's safe.
I'm definitely going to be reevaluating that after our projections, because seems like maybe he's due for a little bit of downward trend.
Yeah. And another thing that I thought was kind of surprising, Antonio Gates, we have at 11. Everybody else has him much lower at 22. So basically Mathbox is saying Antonio Gates is going to be the guy and Hunter Henry
is not.
But I think this goes to where, like what we said earlier, it doesn't have all the situational knowledge.
Right.
And, you know, we know that Antonio Gates is going for that touchdown record. Maybe he cools off after he gets that, and maybe they let Hunter Henry play more. And so we have Hunter Henry at, I think, 19-ish. Everybody else has him at 13. I think maybe we would naturally adjust that up based on situation.
Right.
A couple other names just to mention real quick. Kobe Fleener, we have him at 12. Everybody else has him at like 16-ish. But that's about it as far as like the standouts. We already talked about Greg Olsen, how Mathbox hates him compared to the ranks. Another guy, Eric Ebron, a dude that I've taken a number of times.
A bunch of times, right?
I've taken the bait on that guy at least 2 or 3 years, and I've been looking for him to break out forever. I don't think he's ever going to do it. It's kind of validating that Mathbox says that he's at number 18 and everybody else says he's 11. I kind of believe it.
Yeah, I guess the one name I would throw into this pile that as we're looking at the rankings is Martellus Bennett, which is, you know, we project Martellus, or the industry or the experts kind of project Martellus Bennett to be a starter, like being drafted as the 9th overall, and we have him at, you know, just outside of that, somewhere between 13 and 15.
Yeah.
So I guess we think there's other better options out there.
Yeah, I've heard some arguments for Bennett because he's a bit of a touchdown machine. You know, he's a big body. He can catch, you know, he's got really good hands. He's not fast, but, you know, he can definitely score. And then you've got Aaron Rodgers throwing to him. So best quarterback he's ever played with. The argument against, I think, is actually, I don't really remember Aaron Rodgers throwing that many touchdowns to his tight ends. historically.
He's just had a whole bunch of guys with potential that didn't really get there.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So this looks like the next episode of that.
Maybe, yeah.
Maybe Mathbox is catching that and no one else is, or experts aren't. I'm not sure. We'll find out.
So just to Tyler Eifert is somebody who personally, I think he hasn't had like a year where he's been totally healthy yet, or maybe 1 year. But I think when he is healthy, I mean, he's a touchdown machine. So Mathbox has him at what, the sixth best tight end and expert seventh.
Sixth or seventh. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. So like, I don't know. I might even view him a little higher than that, maybe. But I don't know. Someone who could potentially break out, who Mathbox already thinks might. So.
Well, and you know, according, you only have to pay up just inside of the top 100 pick for him. So maybe that's enough in itself.
So would you pick him over Jordan Reed?
I'm more inclined to be taking a tight end around the time that Eifert's out there as opposed to the time that Reed is out there. But like I said, I will definitely try a draft this year where I'm all in on our kind of like value over replacement strategy instead of the best player available kind of strategy. And so, you know, maybe I'll take a shot on Reed if I get a chance.
Yeah. I mean, you're only playing one tight end. So if you get an advantage there, maybe it's worth it.
Yeah. And the other thing to note is that while the potential is pretty low across this position in general,
you mean, as far as total points scored?
Yeah, total points. I mean, other than Reed and Ertz and Kelsey, it kind of all converges around 1 point and then down to zero and then down to -2. So it kind of follows that running back path where it sort of is a little bit deeper cut than wide receiver. But I still think that there's people that you could grab off the waiver wires to mix and match if you mess up with, you know, if Reed gets taken out. Okay. So coming off of some spicy thoughts and words around Jordan Reed and his monstrously high projection, we're going to go to something that's a little more quiet and kind of round out the rest of these projections. We're going to move on to defense and special teams.
Defense and special teams. So, projections here,
big side, Dave. Keep it going.
Yeah,
we're around the last corner.
Yeah. Overall, I think one thing that we need to point out here is that everyone says that defenses are hard to predict. It's not that they're not valuable, but they're really hard to predict year to year who's going to be good, and so we always take them in the second to last round or whatever, right before kicker, or at least a lot of people do. You tend not to reach for them. Is the conventional wisdom. And what we're finding in our projections is that basically the same thing,
right?
Is that for defense special teams, the error rates in our predictions are higher than the other ones. So Mathbox basically isn't as sure about what it's saying.
Right.
And some of the other ones, especially quarterback. The other thing that kind of ties in with that is that when you look at value over replacement, the range, the highest team, the best team to the lowest team, top 20, is pretty tight.
Yeah, it's only 2 points in total difference between the number one projected defense and the number 20 projected defense, a range of 1.3 positive to -0.6.
Right, so it's not really taking a big stand on anything.
Right.
It's saying, yeah, they're all pretty similar. I mean, there are some differences. There are some significant differences from expert ranks. The biggest one being the first ranked defense from the Mathbox, which is Carolina.
Right.
They're ranked first for us and 11th for expert. So that's a pretty big change. 1.3 basically over replacement, which is the biggest. Obviously, the next one down is 0.9 essentially, which is Denver.
Right.
So Denver, Kansas City, Houston, all really fall in line with what everyone else thinks. Carolina is an outlier for sure, way high. Mathbox is actually pretty high on Seattle as well. We have them at 5 versus 9 in expert.
Yep.
And Cincinnati too. We have them at 6. And Everybody else has them at 12. Yeah. So those are kind of the big ones.
I mean, I think one thing to point out there is all those teams you just talked about are projected as starters already, even though if we have the order different from the experts, those are still defenses that people are expecting to draft and start. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about some of the ones that we have that seem like they'll sneak in to be starters that aren't projected that way right now.
Yeah. Number 7, Jacksonville.
Yeah,
I know. Why? Everybody else has them at 18, which is what I would expect. MathBox has 7. Figure that out. The other one that I thought was pretty crazy, which is Buffalo. We have them at 10. Everybody else has them at 22.
Mm-hmm.
So that's way outside. MathBox also kind of hates Arizona. Most experts says 7. We have them at 11.
And they hate the Patriots. We hate the Patriots.
That is one thing that I was actually talking about with Chris before we went on. I was like, Chris, what is going on with this? Is this something? We have them at 17. Everybody else has them at 4, or experts have them at 4. So is this an error in the data? Is this something that is situationally not right? Like, we need to fix it. Something went wrong in the calculation. Or is it seeing something that's really scaring it away that maybe, I don't know, normal fantasy players aren't gonna see?
Yeah. Same thing with San Diego.
And similar fall. Yeah, exactly. So what I would say about the New England thing at 17 is that I don't think that they're actually gonna end the year at 17.
Right.
I mean, they'll be up the ranks somewhere, but it does give me pause. As with all of these kind of outlier predictions do, it makes me think, oh, maybe they're not a 4. I don't have enough information here to say why exactly, because there aren't advanced. There's no points per opportunity or opportunities per game for
defense
special teams, because that's non-existent. So it's hard to say why it's predicting this. It just gives me pause.
Right.
I mean, so the only thing I can add, I can't say exactly why either, but I will say that it trained on data since 1994. That was more predictive than starting at year 2002 or 2009. And it uses, I don't know, 300 columns of aggregated data across like dozens of data sets. And it's not like we're dealing with rookies or second year players. I mean, the defensive predictions should be, you know, pretty robust, like relative to what else is out there. So, I don't think it's just completely out of the blue.
Okay.
It could be wrong, but I don't think it's just totally erroneous, you know?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, basically you're saying, if any data set could have gotten it right, you feel confident that it's this one, given the length of time that it incorporated and also the number of factors.
Correct.
Yeah.
Okay.
So maybe they're just hard to predict. I mean, one thing that we talked about a lot when we first started the Fantasy Outliers kind of project in general was, you know, Chris was kind of saying, you know, there's always a defense that gives back like 4 or 5 points, mm-hmm. you know, on a weekly basis. It's just, maybe this is starting to show that it's actually just really hard to figure out who that person is, who that team is in advance of the year.
Yep. Yeah. I mean,
but
Denver was
huge. Keep an eye on it. Yeah. Denver was huge one year.
And it's saying they're gonna be
had a
good.
Huge year.
It's,
like, you know,
it's definitely, I mean, it is figuring out that the ones we believe, at least the, you know, a couple of the top 4 or 5 are accurate to expert opinion. So
how are you guys going to draft your defense then? Are you given this? Do you just wait to the end?
Yeah, I don't think there's anything compelling enough here to make me want to try anything different with defense.
Yeah, I think the same thing.
What about you, Chris?
The only thing is Carolina. I mean, if they're such an outlier, I mean, you could maybe even get them in the last round.
Absolutely. Because
this would make me want to take Carolina totally. It just wouldn't make me want to overpay or reach to grab a defense. It wouldn't alter my behavior. It's just like, this is a good pick to know. It's the same thing about Seattle, honestly, and even, you know, maybe even Jacksonville or Baltimore, looking at where their ADPs are, just going, okay, all the good ones are gone. Who am I going to take off of this list that's left?
Right. So drafting them might be tough, but I think in season streaming defenses is still definitely. I mean, I love streaming defenses.
That's my playbook generally too.
Yeah, and I love it. I feel like it's way more predictable than a single player. And we've seen some stuff in the data, like there's road home splits between the fantasy point projections. It's almost a point towards home.
Right.
So that's one thing that you can use to help make a decision if you're close between two defenses. Home run splits actually kind of matter a little bit.
And that would lead to the that would lead to the strategy of getting streaming your defenses instead of just picking one and rolling with it.
Great.
Yeah. All right. I mean, I'm just repeating what you said.
Sure. Well, it's getting late, so of course we're all going to start like repeating what each other is doing. Do we want to roll? Oh, go ahead.
I will say that if you get a good defense, it could be just as valuable as any other position. So I don't think that we should necessarily overlook it. It's just I don't know.
Can't tell.
It almost makes me want to draft two defenses. Just so I maybe get one right.
I mean, we've talked about that. Actually, we talked about that last year as a potential strategy, and I didn't implement it. But it's basically just acknowledging that the best defenses are actually really valuable. If you had Denver the last year or two or whatever, you felt that, right?
Yeah,
it's a big it will give you a big bump. But there's nothing here that's telling me. I think the strategy is just to take one that you think's decent, don't reach for it, and then wait till in season when you can kind of
evaluate things.
Yeah, 4 weeks in or whatever, start streaming.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I think actually is that when you say wait till in season, if we think about the idea that maybe 12 defenses are going to be taken off the board, it's maybe that leaves the rest of the league floating. It almost seems like one of those defenses is more likely to pop than one of the ones that was drafted.
Yeah,
so if you get that extra information for the first couple of weeks, see which ones looks like it's having a good year and grab it as soon as possible. Mm-hmm. Maybe that's how you catch that plus four defense,
And you might use these rankings as a bit of a guide.
To keep an eye on.
Like if you're not totally sure and one of these, one of these is definitely an outlier according to the math box.
Right.
Maybe that's the one you pick.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
And that's what Minnesota was last year for me. A free agent pickup in like the third week or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Yep. All right. And now last but not least, our friends, the wild cards of fantasy sports, the real outlaws kickers.
You said last but not least, but I actually think they are least.
I know.
Last and least.
I actually have a client who's a former NFL kicker,
oh, really?
So I don't want to go on too much on record with this right now. But I love kickers. I think that so just to talk really quickly, we're looking over our projections at kickers right now. It's another data set that looks a little bit kind of like there's a bunch of kind of variability in it, and also not a lot of clear consensus as to the amount that the best person is better than the middle and worst people. It's got a real tight range of expected values, just like kind of defense did.
Yeah. Just glancing at it, it feels a lot like the defensive rankings. Like the range is really tight. The order is kind of wacky as far as it compares to expert consensus ranks. I mean, we've got some guys in here that would never get drafted that are fairly high up on the list, within the top 10. So it just feels really noisy, and I don't know if there's anything I can, reasonably pull out of it. It doesn't feel like there's any great findings here that would make me want to change my draft strategy. This makes me want to take a kicker in the last round.
So it kind of makes sense that it's hard to predict defenses and kickers, right? Because they're more team-based. There's a lot more variables going into it. Than for individual players, I would argue. So, as a fantasy community, we're bad at both of those historically. So, I kind of agree with that. If you can get a good kicker, it's more valuable than you would think to your team. But it's hard. So,
Yeah, but this,
it's hard to pick who that person is.
Right. Yeah, this data isn't showing us who that person is.
Now, I will say the interesting thing is if you look at the person who's at the top of this list, it is Graham Gano from Carolina. So we have moved both Carolina's defense and their kicker to the top of the rankings for our projections.
Yeah. And another thing that I think is interesting finding is...
Interesting finding.
I'm trying to find a way to phrase that.
Soundbite.
Right. Yeah. Gostkowski, number 4 from the Math Box. Expert rankings have him 3. We did a little study about previous year's kickers. And I don't know if it's super relevant for here this year, but in several of the past years, I posed the question to Chris, are there actually any kickers that are worth taking not in the last round? Is there anybody that actually stands out? And for 3 years in a row, in recent years, I forget which ones they were, Gostkowski had a significant value above replacement. He was the only one that stood out. So I don't know if that's going to repeat, but he has done it historically.
Interesting.
Except for last year, I think he was a little off his game, but
he was not great last year. I think it was the 3 years before last year.
But I mean, yeah, it's the Patriots. It's Gostkowski. You know,
he should have a lot of opportunities. Right?
Yeah.
You would assume, but this doesn't necessarily bear that out. I mean, the predictions aren't saying that.
Right. So no, they're not. They're not saying.
It's just our fantasy experience telling us that.
Yeah. I mean, I usually just pick a kicker from a team that I like until I get a chance to evaluate in the league and then in the middle of the season, and then I cut them and grab somebody else.
Yeah. You can stream them too.
Well, also, one thing that's pretty funny to me is I'm looking at these rankings right now, and the expert consensus ranking that we have for Gostkowski and Matt Bryant is 60 and 62. I don't know if that's right, but I will say, just as like a pro tip to everybody, do not take a kicker in the 6th or 7th round of your drafts. Please wait until much later. Okay, everybody, please.
Don't be an idiot.
Even if we had somebody worth a lot, please wait until later.
Yeah, even if they were worth a ton, if you were the only one in your league that knew that, you would still wait. You might take them in the 2nd to last round or something, but... You don't
so the first kicker on average gets drafted in round 10 or mid round 10. So yeah, if you really want to,
in our draft, we light off fireworks and that happens and we hand somebody a trophy for, you're the one who wants to phone in the rest of your draft. I see. Here you go.
Sacco for that.
Yeah,
guy.
Exactly. It's kind of that kind of thing. Cool. All right. Well, I think that the consensus here is basically
there's no
thanks conclusion. For trying MathBot, but we're going to keep an eye on this in future years to see if we can see who's going to pop better.
Yeah. Stick to skill players.
Yes. Let's stick to skill players. Exactly. Okay.
We made it.
We did it.
That was a long one.
Pop open more bottles of champagne, Fantasy Outliers and friends, because we made it through our 2017 predictions list in total. Yeah, that was quite a ride.
I'd say.
So what do you guys think the big takeaways from this first year of publicly shared kind of predictions are for us?
Go ahead, Bro Dave.
Oh boy.
He's staring off into space right now. He's appalled that I asked a question he had to think about at this time of night.
Yeah. I think that one thing that sticks out to me is that the Math Box really likes tight ends.
Okay.
That's not meant to be a joke.
No, I know.
But it is. They're pretty high amongst, their value of a replacement, especially in the high end. I mean, we talked about Jordan Reed for a while. We didn't mention that it also had fairly high values for some of the rookies and second year players, which we kind of, we needed to adjust because it's definitely, there's something
in tight ends,
in tight ends only
specifically,
something noisy going on there. That's problematic.
Because
so.
The algorithm, our data kind of hates rookies and second year players in wide receiver and running back.
Right.
All of them were downgraded.
All of them were down, but they were up in tight end.
Right.
So something's going on there.
Chris, what do you think?
In general, I don't know. I think it's pretty promising. I mean, a lot of the picks, like whether it was above or below like expert consensus, like you could kind of see where it was coming from. A lot of them aligned. I think it's kind of impressive, I guess you would say, given that it doesn't read any news articles or I don't know. I think it's a pretty. Maybe we're onto something. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. Well, I think part of that too is like, you know, when you say it doesn't read news articles, it's not like we feed expert consensus ranking into the algorithm as a starting point.
Right.
We don't pick a day and go, okay, Fantasy Pros, we're going to take where everybody is to begin with, and then we're going to see what warrants us deviating from it. These predictions are totally made from the ground up.
Right.
And so exactly. When it still aligns, it's interesting to see it happen.
I think it's very validating when it lands almost exactly on expert rankings or ADP for whatever site.
It definitely makes me pay more
attention.
Because
it's doing it entirely on its own.
And, yeah.
And it makes you maybe believe it more when it departs from it then.
That's totally what I was thinking.
Because it's getting something right. And so these things that are deviations, you're looking at them going, oh, is
why?
That true?
Like,
why is it saying that?
Yeah.
Maybe it is true because it got all this other stuff right.
Right. Yeah. I think that for me, it's the way that I'm planning to use this is to kind of take a look at the spreadsheet and sort by expert consensus or ADP and to get a sense of what the values are in each round. So I can kind of try to plot my way through the draft to get the players that have the highest values that are in each round that are maybe off the radar for everybody else.
Yeah. I think that's what you have to do.
Yeah.
I think, for me, I've never been able to do that before. I think it's going to be way easier for me to plot out my entire draft and who I'm targeting in each round without spending my whole working day at my job, like reading about fantasy sports. So I don't know. I think it helps organize some things, maybe give you a little more confidence, even if it's sometimes maybe false sense of security. I think it helps organize the draft a lot more.
Yeah. So that awesome. So from here for us, we are developing kind of like what we're going to be doing during the in season, what this program is going to look like, all that kind of stuff, what kind of content we're going to be putting out in the world. So kind of stay tuned for that. If you're listening, if you're still listening at this point, thank you for listening to this giant podcast. We hope that you have fun with your draft and that you, use these to find some value and win some games.
Yeah. And, if you want to argue with us, podcast@fantasyoutliers.com.
Yes, please do.
We want some feedback.
Yeah, please.
Love it, hate it, whatever.
If you want to see the projections, if you want access to the spreadsheet that we were talking through a little bit today, just email us and we will share the link with you to be able to take a look at it.
Or you can go to any of our articles on Medium or it's up there if you want to find it. So.
Yep. There's lots of places to get it. So again, thank you so much for listening and for the 2017 prediction episode. This is Dave signing off.
And bro Dave.
And bro Chris.
Bro Chris. All right. Have a good night, everybody.
Later.